A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. United Healthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Rebag, your premier destination for luxury resale. Elevate your style with our curated collection of bags, watches, and fine jewelry. At Rebag, quality is our priority. Each piece meticulously vetted and verified by experts, ensuring your investment is nothing short of perfection. Buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Hermès, Chanel, and Cartier. Access expertly crafted and hard-to-find pieces that redefine luxury. Your next investment awaits at Rebag. Get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10. That's 10% off the luxury you deserve. Don't miss out. Head to Rebag.com and enter code REBAG10 at checkout. That's REBAG10.
You are listening to Missed Apex Podcast. We live F1. Welcome to Missed Apex Podcast. I'm your host, Richard Reddy. Welcome to the Mexican Race Review, where the F1 2013 season is drawing to a close in dominant style, with Sebastian Vettel pulling and holding gaps at will, driver and car in breathless and perfect harmony. Oh my goodness, was that actually 9 years ago? It is actually, of course, 2022, and it's Max Verstappen this time with Red Bull holding the F1 world in his gloved hands. But we also saw something of a glimmer of hope for Mercedes, did we not, as they worked towards their 2023 car. So in this race review, we'll discuss, is there anything Mercedes could have done to win this Mexican Grand Prix? What kind of information can we glean from these less than dynamic races? And has indeed Max Verstappen put in the most dominant season in F1 history? All that coming up now. But I do like to remind you that we are an independent podcast produced in the podcasting shed with the kind permission of our better halves. We aim to bring you a race review before your Monday morning commute. We might be wrong, but we're first. And joining me in being wrong is the wrongest. It's Matt Doorumpets. Hey, Matt.
Soft tires, bad gear shifts, and Ricciardo. Oh, my.
Yes, actually a reasonable amount to cover, even though it wasn't an action-packed Mexican Grand Prix. It's like the olden days, Matt, isn't it, where we go, actually, this is not that we don't have anything to talk about. It's just that we'll leave less out.
There were almost 37 passes this time.
Oh, wow. You're counting them with a little clicker. All right. I'm delighted that we're joined from the other side of the world at a more sociable time for him, as we are streaming at nearly midnight UK time. We've got presenter Jonathan Simon from Australia Land. Hey, Jono.
How's it going, Spanners? How's it going, everybody? We might have thought it was a boring race, but doing the show notes, there is a lot to talk about. And this is going to be an exciting podcast.
Yeah, we're stuck in that middle land between end of season, the race itself, and also looking forward.
Yeah, looking forward to next year, I hope, because this season, as you said, has been like the end of 2013. It's been a ball fest, unfortunately.
Oh, what? You didn't find the end of 2013 with Sebastian Vettel winning every race by 25 seconds to be an exhilarating roller coaster ride?
No. But let's not hope it opens up a sort of era of dominance like it did for Mercedes next year. We want to see some good competition. The cost cap's coming in. Let's see if it actually gets deployed next year. We'll see if that happens.
I think I've done a pretty good job avoiding cost cap chat on this podcast so far. Let's see if I can keep that up. All the way to Brentwood in Essex now, we have got iRacing streamer and a live watch-along streamer, Scott Tuffy. How's it going, Stuffy?
Thanks for having me, Spanners. I feel vindicated that the last time I was on this podcast, I chose Mexico as one of my two tracks I've removed from next year's calendar.
Fair enough. And I did feel for you a little bit because you do a live F1 watch along on your channel. Was that a challenge from a streaming point of view?
It was, yes. As I was saying to you earlier, I'm a little bit worried about the waffle I may have gone on during that to try and make it interesting. Normally listen to my streams back and I'm a little bit worried, but yes, it was the most challenging watch along today.
We call it vamping. It's a presenter's challenge. But look, there is a lot for us to talk about in the Mexican Grand Prix. Okay, first and foremost, let's address the elephant in the room. It wasn't the most thrilling Grand Prix to sit and watch, especially I think if you were watching that in a pub, it would probably pass you by without too much concern. It wouldn't bother the punters overly, but it was one that if you had timing screens in front of you, you could be glued to the timing screens. And for nearly half the race, it looked like something fantastic might eventually happen. Of course, it didn't. But that is just the way of F1 occasionally. So I think the first thing probably to address is, well, why didn't the Mexican Grand Prix pop? And I think whenever I look forward to these races as a podcast presenter, I try to put this in perspective and manage expectations, especially for people who are a little bit newer to the sport. So going into the Mexican Grand Prix, we knew that this is a track that tends to deliver less than wham-bam action from pillar to post. So Stuffy, you were a bit ahead of the game by suggesting this as one to get rid of. Why didn't the Mexican Grand Prix pop?
Because the tyres lasted forever.
Right.
They could have gone a medium tyre going, I reckon it could have gone on probably for the whole race, is never good for racing. This track in the past, unless there's been a safety car to bunch up the field, has never really provided us with a wow race. I look back at the previous results and Mexico Grand Prix, apart from two races, the leader has always stormed away by over 15 seconds. And that's not really an intriguing race.
Jono?
I think it goes to show what a long way F1 has gone, because 10 years ago, even 2010, just before the Pirelli era came in, I would have loved a race like this today, you know, a nice tight battle for the lead. This is what the strategy was like. Now we're sort of getting disappointed with the action, which is I kind of like where the sport's gone in that direction. And Pirelli, you know, we'll get to it later. They did admit maybe they made a mistake with the tire compounds. Maybe they should have brought a step softer this weekend. So that definitely made a difference as well. I think the opposite as well is that what's so brilliant about Mexico is the altitude and the fact that it can scramble the grid. Since when did Alfa Romeo have a quick car out of nowhere? That hasn't happened since like round five, you know? They really needed that extra point that Bottas scored today. How about Ferrari being so slow? We didn't expect that.
And the thing is with this season, when you've got a team this dominant, Matt, you can sometimes miss when the grid is being scrambled behind. Like Alpine and McLaren have sort of ping-ponged up and down.
Yep.
AlphaTauri, absolutely nowhere today. But it can get masked when there's a team so dominant out ahead.
Yeah, it absolutely can. And, you know, it's very convenient to blame Pirelli and
yes,
the tires. But I, if I'm being honest, I mean, Ricardo figured it out. If he can figure it out, surely the entire Formula One engineering team ought to be able to figure it out too. But I think you really hit the nail on the head when you mentioned the altitude, because it has a multitudinous number of bad effects on the cars.
Name them.
Number one, cooling. The cars don't cool as well. Alpine, for example, were struggling with that issue.
Yes,
in the race.
And that leads us to something we've not really seen for a while, which is cars following to struggle. So they want to be out of the cooling. So you saw cars, when they had the opportunity, they were actually looking to settle if they weren't pushing about 2 seconds behind. And that's not something we've seen for a few seasons now.
Yeah, absolutely. You have another issue that your turbochargers don't work as well. So you have to, you have essentially kind of lower power, or you have to be able to run your turbo at higher RPMs to make up for that. Ferrari, for one, were severely disadvantaged because they were running into trouble with their turbochargers.
Jono, then Stuffy.
Yeah, and along with that too, I mean, we get brilliant straight line speeds here. We had, was it Bottas a few years ago, going at 370 or whatever he did to break the straight line speed record. That's a brilliant part about it too. I think one thing with the altitude, and this is what we didn't expect, we all wanted to see a track where where would this Mercedes fare well? And we always said, you know what, with the porpoising early in the season, maybe a low-speed circuit, maybe a circuit with no bumps. We're trying to guess, hey, maybe Singapore's the next shot. Nobody thought Mexico. I know it's a long way in the development of the car, but the fact that they've been struggling with straight-line speed and Mexico with such thin air means you're going to travel a bit faster. It means it sort of nullifies the effect of them lacking that straight line speed. We saw this in previous years when Mercedes had the straight line speed and were dominating the sport. It was Red Bull who were struggling, and somehow at Mexico, they were the car winning the race. The roles are reversed. Mercedes didn't win the race today, but they came awfully close. I thought they had a tremendous race car today.
Yeah, Jono's just made my point, really, that the effects that we've seen on Mercedes last week in COTA, Hamilton was losing so much time down the main straights due to the straight line speed of Mercedes, of Max Verstappen. I think Max came from nearly a second behind him down that back straight. And also as well, the DRS is not as powerful here due to the thinner air. So that's why really it's we don't see as many overtakes as maybe we should with such a long back straight.
I think a couple of points have come out there are really interesting. I think so. Obviously, we can blame the altitude for a long time. We can blame Pirelli, which I'll definitely want to come back and do a little bit. The first point that Stuffy made about Valtteri Bottas doing well here, I found my notes from last year. He did really well last year as well. And he seems to do well also at Sochi. So I think there's a comparison here maybe with the surface between the Mexican Grand Prix and the Russian Grand Prix as well. And when what we saw with the initial Grand Prix in Russia, Matt, was that, you know, Nico Rosberg locked up into turn one, didn't he? And then completely flat spotted and did the rest of the race on his tyres, on the second set of tyres. So as soon as Bottas was doing well, my mind suddenly went, oh, that's because it's a really low grip surface. And even in the race today, you saw back ends coming out. You saw four wheel drifts, particularly from Gasly. So very much a low grip surface.
Yeah, and not just a low grip surface. This brings me to one of my favorite theories that I have no evidence for at all. But if you're an aerodynamics engineer, do feel free to send me a note. I begin to wonder, watching the cars struggle, if one, the just where they are weighty, sort of in the back end, and two, if perhaps the lower pressure air is worse for the diffuser than maybe it is for the rear wings and stuff like that. So that might be why Mercedes was less disadvantaged, because they've had to run their car higher. They're getting more downforce from above the car. But I don't know if that's true or not. But that all does essentially make it a slippier surface, which plays to, as we've seen in the past, Bottas' strength.
Okay, so let's say, in theory, We go back in time and we warn Pirelli about this, and they just go for a softer compound. So they go a step softer, maybe even two. And maybe this race does come to life and you start to see the things that we were looking out for in this race, looking at the timing screens. Stint one, we're looking for the soft tire runners to start to drop off. And we can see it as it gets to kind of lap 20. You see the soft tires start to drop off and you go, well, this is exciting. This is interesting. Now we can see the strategy unfold. But because they lasted that little bit longer, and because the mediums could then go on till the end of the race, we were robbed of that in the second part. I think you could almost magic all the problems away, Jono, if we'd have had higher wear. But I do wonder whether Pirelli, somehow, they still have this kind of ancestral PTSD from Silverstone when the tyres were just exploding everywhere, and they're scared of turning up at a track and ruining the whole event because tyres are exploding everywhere. But I think we need to collectively go, we'll forgive you. If it goes wrong one time, we'll forgive you. But can we have two stop races, please?
But I don't see where the tyres would explode in Mexico. There's no really... is there any high-speed corners at Mexico?
Not anymore.
Yeah, unless they ran sort of, they skipped the stadium section and did the old circuit around the stadium. Yeah, maybe you'd have to go with the compound we used today. But Silverstone, you know, you've got such high loads. Suzuka was the same. Ironically, we never used the dry tires there because it was so wet. Zandvoort with the bank corner. You never bring those super hard C1 that we've only used about five times this season, unless you go to those circuits like Barcelona as well. I think at this circuit, yeah, they did go a step too hard. And Pirelli aren't going to be perfect. They've made mistakes. They even admitted this weekend they probably did make the mistake, as we said. Mm. And I think, again, the race was, you could tell it was a step too hard. The fact that Red Bull and Max Verstappen and Sergio Perez were able to make you softs last almost half the race was insane.
So what this does highlight to me, and I promise we're going to get off Mexico in just a moment, what this highlights to me is how much power Pirelli have to make the sport genuinely entertaining. So that one Pirelli decision was the difference between an exciting race with loads of strategy, probably not any passing, as much action as you'd want, or what we got today, which was a bit of a tease, frankly. But to me, making the change to make the tyres softer, if they don't all explode, is the perfect mix between introducing an element that is entertaining and also enriches the sport. I wouldn't want to do things for the sake of it, like double points, Abu Dhabi, or right, and now suddenly each car gets a third team, but only on the 13th lap, go, and they get ninja stars. So that's, you know, just for the show. But Pirelli making that change could make a substantial difference to how F1 is perceived. And there'll be a lot of newer fans who F1 is relying on suddenly looking at a race like this and going, oh, I thought F1 was always brilliant all the time. No! You have to suffer like us, the fans from the 80s and the 90s. Sometimes F1's boring.
Are you actually arguing that tires are the most important thing? No. I just need to get this on record.
No, you shut up. Stuffy, you say things now.
I just think overall Pirelli are probably going through a learning process. They've made a couple of mistakes with their compounds this year. The wet tire is probably the biggest. We've seen teams not want to use it at all because it's slower than the intermediate in extreme wet conditions. All year, the hard tire has been difficult to switch on from the get-go. It's only going to get harder with, obviously, tire blankets being reduced as well. But I think maybe with these new regulations, with the new aerodynamics, the ground effect, Pirelli are also going through a learning curve of how their tires react with this new style of racing. And hopefully, I mean, this is more of hope than anything. I'm hoping that we get better decisions in regards to compounds and just overall better wearing compounds next year and in the further years.
And just to wrap up on that is think back to when Pirelli signed this tire deal about 11 years ago. Bridgestone didn't want to sign up to this because they didn't want their brand to get affected by everyone saying, hey, look, our tires are blowing up and hey, we can't make tires that last a long time. Pirelli signed up, got the buy-in from F1. Now they're making durable rubber. It's become a win-win situation. So there's that to consider for Pirelli too, is the fact that do you want to make rubber that's going to go and blow up and wear very easily? Is that good for your branding?
No. Certainly not above my pay grade in the business world, but we do have someone who likes to tell us where the race was won and lost. That person's Matt.
Yes, and even though I teased you with tires, and you could argue that tire choice was very critical, I would argue today that it was really the start of the race that saw the players put into play that mattered the most. And I am talking about the start with Max and Lewis and George and Checo.
Yes, very much, very reminiscent of the olden days of Formula One, Matt, where, in fact, I think I've said this in a previous show, where in the olden days, you would watch turn one, see how it shook out for the end of lap one, then you go and make a cup of tea, maybe have a little bit of a nap as the sounds of F1 cars going round like a screeching lullaby would then suddenly wake you up maybe it's time for pit stops. Let's see how it'll go. And you could have done that in the race today. But that start from a racing point of view was absolutely fascinating. And Stuffy, I think the slipstream dynamics between that front three was actually like it took a few replays to figure out exactly what was going on.
Yeah, Mexico, it was big, big talks about that T1 because it's the longest run down into the first corner on the calendar. We was all thinking similar to Sochi. It's not always necessarily the best to be on pole because of how long that run is and how powerful the slipstream is. But then once you saw, not to mention tyres again, but once you saw the Mercedes have medium tyres compared to the Red Bulls on softs, you're just thinking, are they going to get that launch off the line that is required to get ahead of that Red Bull? And they didn't. And it ended up being the two Mercedes going side by side through the corners instead.
My son actually said to me, good question. He said, have Red Bull been overtaken on a straight at all season? And I had to think. So if you can name a time when Red Bull have been overtaken on a straight?
Very early on in the first couple of seasons when we had the Leclerc and Max chopping and changing at Saudi and Bahrain. But since then, they've been by far like always the fastest top, team much
in the straight.
The straight line speed.
Oh, that's taken me back. Oh, I feel like reminiscing. Remember when Leclerc was in a championship battle many, many months ago? But that start was fascinating, though, Jono. And as Stuffy says, really, Red Bull were away with it. So Verstappen kind of, he did enough to get out. I felt like, actually, he could pick which Mercedes to give a slipstream to. And it feels like he actively picked Russell's, like, no, shut up, Hamilton. But there was loads going on there because Hamilton could have boxed Russell in and gone out into the no slipstream, ended up tucking up in behind. Russell, the second he came out of that slipstream, just got hit with a waft of Mexican air and was just a sitting duck from there.
You know, Verstappen did everything Bottas should have done last year when they allowed Max Verstappen to lead the race into T1 and the Mercedes cars were pointing fingers and whose fault was that, you know, back then. 12 months ago. So today in the race, the thing I liked about the start was how big of a straight line speed advantage Red Bull have. So as you saw, Max Verstappen in front, Russell tucked right in behind him. As soon as Hamilton in third pulled out of the slipstream, you saw him tuck back into it. He lost so much ground so quickly because he saw Perez creeping in very close behind in fourth. So Hamilton had no option but to join the train in that situation. And then watching Russell's onboard at the start too, he was tucked in the slipstream almost the entire time on the run down to T1 and still couldn't make a move on Max Verstappen. So it was just such a big straight line speed advantage for that Honda engine. Is it Honda? I don't know.
I think this is, like you said there, John, I think they had such a straight line speed advantage. And around Mexico, the only real overtaking opportunity is down into T1. Now, Mercedes, were they really going to have an opportunity to beat them outright on pace? They were faster in qualifying in the fast twisty sections because of the better downforce package they've got at this circuit in particular compared to Red Bull. But were they really going to have an opportunity, even with DRS, to beat Max or Perez into that first corner? That's probably why we saw them start on the medium and try and mix it up on strategy, beat them in the pits rather than on outright pace.
And it's an important point, and we're going to get to that strategy battle because the fact that Hamilton in the opening sector for pretty much every single lap of the opening stint, he was about a tenth and a half quicker than Verstappen. You take out the draft he was getting, not even the DRS, just the draft, he would lose about 0.2 from that draft advantage. So that also kept the Mercedes into play. So I don't think the Mercedes had the pace today, nevertheless.
Matt, last one on the start. I think we're still on the start. Haven't even got to turn one yet.
I see. I already want to argue with Jono about that, though. But I'll try and stick a pin in it for later. I think for the start, I think what it demonstrated more than anything else was Russell's inexperience. Because the best place to be going into turn one was directly behind Max if you weren't already ahead of him. He was good at the start boxing Lewis out from taking that spot from Max. But then he gave it up, and he gave up not one but two positions as a result of it. And you potentially saw the slightly slower Mercedes, because Hamilton did have some engine issues, actually the lead driver from then on.
Stuffy?
Yeah, I'd just really like to give a massive credit to every driver on the grid, because how long has it been we haven't seen a turn one incident at Mexico with the speeds that they're all carrying, with full fuel, higher speed braking zone? I don't think we saw even a lockup down into T1, and they all got through pretty. To be fair, the race probably could have done with it. In hindsight, but fair play to them for all making it through.
Which is where Mercedes went wrong. They've got the blueprints from Hungaroring 2021. That was the only way they were going to beat Max Verstappen this season, was if one of them managed to tag Verstappen. But even then, you know, he had a speed advantage to get away. To me, the most fascinating thing about the turn one dynamic here and in COTA is that Lewis Hamilton and George Russell, I'm not trying to stir a fake rivalry, but it's so clear they have eyes on each other and it is important to them which one gets ahead. And turn one is especially important with teammates because once they settle into the race, you know, they're more than likely going to be told to hold station to save your tyres or avoid curbs, slow down. Oh, we've got an engine issue, which means you can't race, unfortunately. They want to be the one to get that first pit stop. They want the kudos of being up ahead. And I think in Circuit of the Americas, that was on Russell really keeping his eyes on Hamilton and then kind of not seeing what was going on ahead with signs or being surprised by it or compromised by his ambition to get by Lewis Hamilton. And here we saw Lewis Hamilton really not wanting to give up around the outside. Whatever I think George Russell did, Hamilton was going to be escorting him to the end. Russell was quite compliant, pretty much took to the road, just had a whisper of tyre, still on the track at the exit of turn three. But Hamilton, if he needed to have shoved him off, I think Hamilton was shoving him off. Those two are vying to stamp their authority in Mercedes because they think they've got a winning car for 2023.
I think you're onto something there. Not so much really within the team, but everyone outside, the public are noticing it. I don't know if you noticed, David Coulthard did the interviews after qualifying. And he asked a cheeky little question to Hamilton and said, "So is there anything you can learn from George Russell's qualifying lap?" And the look Lewis gave him, I think Lewis took that a bit personally. And that was kind of a little bit of an answer to those critics about him and George Russell. But I'm still here and I'm not going anywhere anytime soon.
John, I'd be disappointed if they weren't competing in an inter-team way, be it in a friendly way that's not as destructive or as toxic as the Rosberg-Hamilton battle, or indeed Hamilton and Alonso at McLaren. But Matt, let's move on to strategy, because that is, I think, the one thing we really can pin our tail on. Let's pin the strategy tail on the Mexican donkey.
Let's do that. And to do that, we really have to talk about the tires. Pirelli came out before the race, and they said the fastest way around the track was a two-stopper, soft, medium, medium.
A trick!
And the next quickest was medium hard, one stop. What did we see? Soft medium, one stop, won the race. And potentially the fastest way round was maybe a medium hard, a medium soft, with a change of tire at lap 45. It was a nightmare because there was essentially no degradation on these tires, which I think is the point Jana was making earlier, that the tires were wildly overperforming what you'd normally expect. It threw all of the engineers into a complete and total disarray. And add to that fact, and I think this is really what did Mercedes in and save Red Bull's bacon. Yesterday in qualifying, the track temperature was 50 degrees C. Today, when the race started, it was 45 degrees C. By lap 10, it was down to 40, and it eventually dropped to 38. And as the temperature came down, the tires and the tire management came more and more into Red Bull's window.
Yeah, see, I've got a bit of a hot take on this, but I think Red Bull lucked into that strategy today and a bit into that win. Because at the start, they were starting on the soft tires, probably preparing to do a two-stop strategy. They had two sets of fresh mediums, a set of fresh hards, and Mercedes on the mediums, clearly going for that alternative strategy, trying to outdo them by basically saying to Red Bull, you're going to have to do this out on track. And what happened is that Perez and Verstappen were actually the two earliest drivers, other than Stroll, to come in and pit on the soft tyres to the mediums. That's around lap 23 and 25. Now, that indicates to me that they're going to a two-stop strategy. They're on U softs, two new sets of mediums.
So you're saying at this point with the first stop, they were going with the Pirelli prediction?
Yeah.
Yes, exactly that. And then it was only when, and then a few laps later, Hamilton came in for his one stop on the hards. Apparently, Toto Wolff says that this was forced onto him by Lewis, contrary to what Lewis has said in interviews afterwards. So a little bit of contradiction there. But it was only when you saw Vettel doing pretty decent lap times on soft tyres for nearly 40 laps, Danny Ric and Zhou take their tyres to 44 laps on mediums. But the Red Bulls then went, hang on a second, we can do something here. Because I don't know if anyone picked up on it, Alpine even came onto Alonso's radio and said to him, the hard tyre looks a good race tyre. They even saw that because Hamilton was doing pretty similar lap times to Max, but no one predicted that the medium tyre would last that long, or just tyres in general.
Matt, quickly then.
Yeah, well, I just wanted to pick up on that. Vettel went 37 laps on the soft tyre before he pitted.
Did he?
But Yeah, oh. He absolutely did. But the thing I heard Hamilton say was that he wanted, and George said this too, that they both kind of wanted to start on the soft tire at the beginning of the race. So maybe he and Toto were talking about different things there.
Maybe. I think overall Mercedes were just trying to be a little bit more aggressive with their strategy, try and force Red Bull's hand. But unfortunately, it swung right into their lap.
Here's where I believe, and apart from Christian Horner saying after the race that he said, no, it was planned, that strategy, I don't think that's true. I think that everyone was planning a two-stop and then the deg sort of was better than expected. Yeah. What was embarrassing for Mercedes was that for 67 of the 71 laps of this race, Lewis Hamilton, which is the car that was competing for the win, he was on slower tires than Max Verstappen. What I mean by that is not more worn tires. I mean, for 67 of those laps, when Max was on the soft, Lewis was on the medium. Mm. When Max was on the medium, Lewis was on the hard. And that goes to me, Mercedes, at least we know they were planning a two-stop. And Red Bull probably adjusted and said, hey, Mercedes have butchered this race. Mm. Let's just one stop and hold them back. We don't need a two-stop this and risk it.
Yeah, so it's okay to be on a slower tire for the whole of the race if you're forcing your opponents into a two-stop. So if Red Bull had done the two-stop, it doesn't really matter that you were on you were on the harder compounds. But for how it turned out in the end, with hindsight, Jono, what really happened is that Mercedes, for no reason, voluntarily were on harder, slower tires, matching on pretty similar strategies. Obviously, they wouldn't have known that going in, and we wouldn't have predicted that going in.
Well, that's where I think Mercedes dictated Red Bull's strategy. Mercedes essentially helped them win the race because they went on the slower compounds. And yeah, that the aim was maybe we'll try and one stop when Red Bull two stop. And Red Bull said, well, we don't need to. We've got track advantage now. Let's just one stop this race. So it was quite a catastrophe, really. And I know Mercedes didn't. What I heard, the reason they didn't start on the softs, and this could be wrong, was that they were used softs. Well, Red Bull managed to make them last almost 25 laps.
Ugh, Matt.
I'm going to really violently disagree with you there, because think back. What is the one thing that Mercedes, even in this thin atmosphere, did not have? Straight line speed over the Red Bull. What is the one thing they needed to pass the Red Bull on track, which would have been going the opposite way for them strategically?
Chicken
wings.
They
needed that speed. They had to make this work in the either get ahead at the start of the race, hold them back, or pass them in the pits.
Yeah, I agree with you, Matt, there, to be honest, to rain on your parade there, John.
Jono.
You heard throughout the race, Hamilton and Russell continue to question these tyres. They didn't feel comfortable in them from the get-go, but Bono and George's engineer kept coming on saying, Verstappen's tyres are going to fall off, Perez's tyres are going to fall off.
They're going to go.
They was banking on the on the Red Bull's tyres falling off and having to come in and make another pit stop and overtake on track. But it just never came. And even Lewis went, he's pulling away. What's happening here, guys?
Look, I know what you're saying, and I that's a good point too. But when you're trying to overcut and you get that little track advantage, you can somehow make a pass, you know? So, for example, I thought if Mercedes two-stopped and managed to get that overcut, they could have been on the softs at the end of the race, or maybe if they went medium-medium, for example, or if you don't want to show your hand, hey, just go medium-soft and then pretend you're sort of going to the end on the softs, which is never going to happen. But my point is at least try and get the overcut, and then that's your advantage there on lap time. Yes, you might not be able to pass in a straight line, but the tires would help you. You know, you get right up to the back of the Red Bull. No way you don't pass them when you have DRS.
Okay, so this is where it gets very interesting. It would have been close. Option one, start on the soft tire, go to the medium tire, like Red Bull. But I don't think Mercedes could have won that way because there wasn't enough tire degradation because the track temperatures drop. Option two is start on the medium and pull a Daniel Ricciardo. And guess what I did? I actually looked at some numbers for that. And if Lewis had done that, if he'd gone all the way to lap 45,
he had
a 17 second gap on Max. He would have lost a second a lap for 15 laps. Pitted, had a 20-second gap to catch from lap 45 to the end on the soft tire to catch Max. And we saw Ricciardo in a McLaren, which does not also have great speed in a straight line, passing Alpines and everybody else. Such a big difference it was.
Yeah, and I think George Russell's lap at the end, where he was about 2.5 seconds, I think, faster than anyone else on track, made everyone go, ooh. If someone had been a bit brave 10 laps from the end and just bolting on an extra pair of softs, it could have made a difference. Well, even 15 laps from the end. So I think it's kind of painting a picture here that George Russell was kind of right with every call he made. Now, initially, I was thinking, oh, this is George Russell, who seems like someone who likes to go to the extreme tactics. And yeah, Stuffy's nodding. He likes to kind of go for it. You know, he's a bit Jenson Button with the intermediates. Go, yeah, we'll risk the slicks. Yeah, let's get onto the wet tyres before everyone else. Let's do something different. So I thought he was being just a bit impetuous like that, trying to, A, go from the mediums all the way into the soft tyre zone, and then, B, wanting to come off the hards onto the softs. But he was probably right on both counts.
100%. If he'd gone on to those, he knew, I think he made that call about 3 laps into his hard stint.
Yeah.
After going into him, he knew very quickly. And this was an example of drivers sticking to what their pit wall is telling them. Because the Mercedes kept telling them, no, but this is the right tyre. Trust us, the mediums are going to fall off. And it never did. Whereas if they'd listened to George, split the strategies, and maybe we could have had a similar Ricciardo situation where he just made up all that time towards the end. And we might have had a different ending to this race.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds. And they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why United Healthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
I don't think this is what didn't help Mercedes, right? If you had another team, and as far as I know, I think Hamilton was the first on the hards from my memory. I've got to go look at the sheet right now. But if you had another driver come out, Latifi, yeah, well, come on, that's not a reference point. Yeah,
no, I mean,
but it is true. It is true that Latifi was first on the hards. He did finish 2 laps down and the only driver 2 laps down. Anyway, if they had a good driver on the hards, another driver on the hard. Sorry, you know what I mean? My bad.
Edit that out. Don't worry.
No, it's all right. Sorry, Nicholas. I've had enough making fun of him now. My point is, finally, to get to it, you could have used that as a reference point. And this happened in other races. Was it Zandvoort, the race where they chucked a few drivers on hards and it was like, well, that's not working. Yeah. Why would we ever go on that tyre? And then that was the last time we had sort of the C1s in play that race, you know, the hardest compound available. We didn't have that this weekend, but you get my point.
Yeah. And I was disappointed in general when you see, well, you're going for this longer go long strategy, but then you only go 4 laps longer on your mediums than Red Bull did on the softs.
Here's the thing. Both Russell and Hamilton loved the medium tire. They were both, we're happy with this tire. If you bring Hamilton in to cover off Max or because you think this is the winning strategy, so be it. Russell is now leading the race on a tire he's happy on. The math wasn't as good for him because he was further back. But at the end of the day, if they just said, well, why don't we let Russell stay out till Max catches him? And if he's close enough to the end, we could just put him on soft tires and see what happens. That's where I think that's where I'd like to see some more creative flexibility from Mercedes.
Well, I think Stuffy's right. I think they had put all their eggs in the basket of don't worry, don't worry. Red Bull's mediums are going to go any second now. And I just want to get into that experience of watching it into the timing screens. So as viewers, with not a lot of on-track action, what we see in stint one and what we saw here by watching the timing screens is actually very similar to what we saw Hamilton being very good at against Rosberg, against Vettel, and against Bottas as well, which is managing the stint one. And I think looking at our Patreon Slack group during the race, there's, you know, a mixture of understanding of what's going on in stint one, and I'm certainly no strategy expert either, but there were some people, you know, are still looking at it going, Hamilton's catching up a bit. Oh, now Verstappen's faster. Hamilton must have made a mistake. Oh, Perez is catching up a bit. Oh, he's dropped back. What's going on? And I think it's hard to pick apart the nuance of what the drivers are up to. And to my best understanding, you've basically got a three-pronged game of chicken between drivers in a pack on that stint one, which is a DRS chicken. So can I save as much tyres as I can without letting the driver behind me into the DRS zone 1 second away to let them open the rear flap to catch me? Can I keep my pace up fast enough to save my tyres at the same time so that I can either go longer or I'm going to have more tyres to attack at the end of the stint? And this is the kind of thing that we've seen Lewis Hamilton be brutal at before during stint one. And I was a little bit disappointed here, Matt, that yes, he was maintaining that gap okay. He was maintaining the gap to Perez. Perez would be threatening the DRS zone, and then he'd push on a little forward further and a little faster. And you'd see him get a jump in lap times on Verstappen and think he was catching. And then Verstappen, he's obviously managing his tyres as well. He pulls away because he doesn't want Lewis Hamilton in his DRS or even in his toe. But what we didn't see was Lewis Hamilton doing that aggressive push. And I just wonder, because the soft tyre did drop off, could Lewis Hamilton have harassed Max Verstappen in the way that he used to do to Vettel and Bottas and Rosberg to try and force them into a different strategy?
It's possible. It would have been easier for him maybe if he was on the soft tyre at the start of the race. But again, you didn't have... Red Bull didn't run the tyre long enough to make that strategy work for Mercedes.
No, but what I'm saying is, if Hamilton's closing the gap and suddenly Verstappen's like, well, I can't let him in the DRS, he's going to overtake here, I need to increase my pace, you're then taking out tyre life. And Hamilton was great at that. I haven't seen him do that this season, but you know, he used to really force a competitor to use up their tyre life. And you would have Bottas, Stuffy, who's a great driver, looking ordinary at the end of first stints because he'd lost his tyres and he was all over the place, and Hamilton would just cruise by him even though they're both very fast drivers.
I think this just falls straight back into the fact that Lewis had been told that this isn't going to be done out on track. This is going to be done in the pit lane. And I think they also brought him in early, as Matt said. Yeah. His tyres were good.
I think
the reason Lewis didn't go as harder as he could have done exactly what you've just said, harassed Max a bit more. I think he's been told, we're going to take this a lot longer. And then it'll be interesting to hear and find out that if actually, because 30 laps, I think I've got the charts up here. Lap 29, he came in and pitted. That's only four laps after
Max.
And that's actually a lap earlier than what Pirelli had even suggested for their medium tyres. Why did they bring him in so early? And that's, I think Lewis was under the impression probably before the race that they was going to take that medium tyre a bit longer.
I think it goes back to what Matt said, which was Mercedes were probably scared that they couldn't pass the Red Bulls, you know, because Perez, and this is where having a good second driver is really important. Perez was used in the race win fight today. He was used as a driver who pitted early to threaten the Mercedes, and Mercedes gone, well, you know, if we're going to have to pass two Red Bulls in one race to win this race, that's going to be tough. Let's pit Lewis now. It ended up ultimately being such a wrong decision.
Okay. And look, I was dithering on the show title a little earlier. Normally we do a show title. There was one, and it's from a certain Mr. Mike Stoner. But because Max Verstappen has got the record for the most race wins, I'm going to finally allow a pun to be the show title reluctantly. So the title of today's show is the Mexico Grand Prix. It's not even a good pun, Matt. It's not even a good pun.
No, it's not. I know that we discussed, have we discussed the virtual safety car and Russell yet?
No. because he was asking to come in. And was he pretending that he had a flat tire, or did I miss that?
Yeah, he was pretending he had a flat tire.
That's quite funny. I thought I caught that. I thought, no, he's not going to be sitting there. It's like when the equivalent of a kid putting their forehead on the radiator to go, look, Mum, feel my forehead. I have to take a day off school. I have to. He's like, I've got a flat tire. No, you haven't, George. We can see. We've got all the numbers here. No, you haven't.
Yeah, it was hilarious. And he's like, well, this tire is still terrible and we should come in right now. And he wasn't wrong. He didn't have anything to lose because the Ferraris were behind him. But what he didn't remember or didn't understand strategically was that he was sitting in both Perez and Verstappen's pit window.
Yes.
And there was no way they were going to give up a fast lap to Red Bull if they could help it.
Yeah. And well, all the way through, I did wonder if Max did have to pit at any point, Russell had stayed in that pit window. So yep. On a track that's difficult to overtake, Russell would only have had to have held him up a second or two, a couple of seconds. That could have been the difference between Hamilton winning or losing.
Yeah, I will say, I think if they did bring him in, then he might well have caught and passed Lewis for second place on the soft tire.
All right.
Such was the advantage that late in the race.
All right. We're going to play a little game in just a second. Or should we play it now? Yeah, let's do it now.
Whose fault is it?
Because I want to get to some of the racing action.
And here we look, go.
I'm definitely not going to sit here and say that the Mexican Grand Prix was one of the most action-packed in the world in the F1 season, but we see it coming now. And I think, you know, if this was your first Mexican Grand Prix, then you know next time you see it, it's like Monaco, it's like Barcelona, it's got its quirks and foibles. So I think a lot of F1 enjoyment is down to expectation management. And I think Mexico, it's got its place on the calendar, much in the same way that Zandvoort has its place on the calendar. I don't think it's going to go anywhere. It's a celebration of Formula One in Mexico. They're certainly having a good time. The crowd, I think, is best described as feral. That is a hell of an atmosphere to match, I think, Zandvoort and Silverstone. And Cota seem to have a great atmosphere as well. So it's not going anywhere, but it does have its foibles. As we talked about, the high air, we talked about the 3 points we went through before. The one thing we didn't do is talk about the layout. We didn't talk about the layout and the stadium section. It sort of spaces everyone out going down to turn one, which limits turn one overtakes. But the in section is very go-kart tracky. And it's much more similar to Monaco than it is to, say, Cota, with the double right-hander that led to this first incident. For whose fault is it? Which was Daniel Ricciardo versus Yuki Tsunoda. Okay, I believe this is going to be a battle between Stuffy and Jono. Who wants to make the case first? Let's go. Jono, whose fault was it?
Well, it's obviously Daniel Ricciardo's fault, and here's why it's Daniel Ricciardo's fault. Now, it's okay to make mistakes in the world, that's fine, but look at the incident that happened a couple laps later between, not even an incident, just a sort of racing battle between Guan Yu Zhou, Sebastian Vettel. Zhou pokes his nose up the inside and Vettel gives him space. Why? Because Zhou was already alongside him heading into the corner. Ricciardo's gone for a great lunge, and it goes back to that Lance Stroll theory we had. A good driver doesn't turn into that and doesn't crash into Daniel Ricciardo. Tsunoda, not sort of being aware, turns in. There's an incident. 0% Tsunoda's fault. If he was a good driver looking in his mirrors, he probably could have avoided the incident. But totally Daniel Ricciardo's fault. Was a 10-second penalty draconian? Is any penalty in motorsport fair? Like, Tsunoda's retired and Ricciardo's gone and had one of his best results in 2 years? No motorsport penalties are fair. But there, that's my analysis of the incident.
Stuffy, whose fault was it?
So anyone who has listened to this podcast before will know that I am a harsh critic of Yuki Tsunoda.
Boo.
I am not 100% saying it's Yuki's fault. I do agree, actually, it's Daniel's fault.
Oh.
But what I will say, I know it's a bit of an anticlimactic there, anticlimax, but I do think Tsunoda hasn't hit the apex there. I'm not saying you have to hit the apex every single time, but as John has said, he's clearly not, he knows Daniel's there, but he's not fully aware of where he is because he kind of half-heartedly turns into that apex. He leaves room. If you look at when the point of contact is, Daniel is as close to that curb as can possibly be. Yes, it was a lunge, and if there was a more aware driver, then that move would have been brilliant. But because it's Yuki, just a little bit of spatial awareness, kind of half-heartedly turns into the corner. And that's allowed Daniel to go, thank you, I will slip in there. But unfortunately, it didn't pan out that way, and they knocked Wills.
Matt?
Yeah, so this is an interesting thing about the penalty I want to get to in a second. But I think it's 100% Ricardo's fault, because on TV, it was a fake alongside of. I think Yuki started turning, breaking, and turning in before Ricardo's nose was anywhere near, never mind his front wing or his front wheels, anywhere near where Tsunoda was. And I think Tsunoda knew he was back there and was giving him a space to gracefully back out in case he was kind of near the back of Tsunoda's car. And instead, Ricardo being Ricardo said, I'm really tired of being behind you on my fresh new soft tires that are 2.5 second laps faster. I'm going to shove it right up in there and see if I can't sneak by.
Ricardo's own explanation post-race was that it wasn't an out-and-out overtaking attempt, but he was trying to put his nose in to show, to say, oh, well, you need to now go around me, give me space, and give me a better exit, which it doesn't like really, I don't take much truck with that. You've still sort of put your nose in. And by the time, I think you're right, Matt, that Tsunoda was committing to turn in, Ricardo wasn't as far alongside as he was when the contact eventually happened. But on the other part of it, like, you're right, Tsunoda wasn't going for the apex. So he was kind of in this wishy-washy middle ground. And whilst I agree Daniel Ricciardo's fault, you know, you've just yeeted him off the track there, what was Tsunoda's plan? It's quite a gamble to say, I'm going to shut the door on you, when you've got some part of your car alongside. So we're on a straight, we're going into the corner, you are somewhat alongside, I'm going to shut the door and rely on you to back out. So what you're doing now is saying the fate of my race is in the hands of Daniel Ricciardo making a decision. If you were the driver coach, you might look back at that and go, well, if you had have left a car's width and gone to the outside and given yourself a good run out, maybe you'd still be in that Grand Prix.
Go on, John.
Go on, Jono. You're itching.
I just came up with the best theory, perfect for Missed Apex, is so AlphaTauri's, I just realized they're 1 point behind Haas for eighth in the Constructors' Championship. Now, if Yuki had taken out both himself and Danny Ric out of the race in that situation, Gasly would have scored a point. They would have been tied with Haas for eighth. That could have been what Yuki Tsunoda was thinking about. No, that's obviously a joke. Somebody's going to take that seriously somewhere out there and tweet it.
What have I told you? Never admit it's a joke. Just deal with the YouTube comments. Deal with it.
I think, as you were saying, Spanners, like, he was in that wishy-washy land. And you talked about that little section of the track is like go-kart. Oh, anyway.
It's like indoor go-kart track, isn't it?
Well, what Danny was doing was kind of a standard go-karting move anyway. He was trying the cutback. Now, I think Yuki has done enough F1 races and enough junior racing to know kind of what might potentially be coming. And if you give someone who is hounding you a couple of corners previously anyway, I'm sure he probably got info that, oh, you've got a feisty Daniel Ricciardo with fresh tyres, soft tyres on your rear. You're not going to invite them to show their nose because otherwise he's going to take that opportunity. Still Daniel's fault, but Tsunoda, once again, I think could have done better to avoid that situation entirely.
Look, I know 3 or 4 Australians, and based on that sample size of basically Jono, Uncle Steve, and watching Daniel Ricciardo on telly, I think he'll be completely fine with it. And in fact, he'll probably look at that and go, yeah, it's worked out. I yeeted Tsunoda out of the way, so he's not even in the race anymore. He's out, so he can't come back at me. I've utilised my soft tyres, because if I'd got stuck behind him, it would have been a waste. I've gotten ahead of the cars in front. I've built my 10-second gap, and I've got away with it scot-free. So I think he'll probably be like, ah, well. I don't think he'll be sitting in bed sweating, going, oh, Yuki hasn't texted me back after I apologised.
I would just like to make a comment. It could be included in regards to who missed the apex, but is there ever going to be consistency in the FIA and the stewarding? Did that really warrant a 10-second penalty when George Russell's last week was a 5-second penalty?
Look, I don't agree with it, but they go easier on lap one. They go easier. I still think, like, you still wrecked someone's race being a turnip, but because it's lap one, you get less of a penalty.
I think they thought it would cost him a place. because he had the soft tires instead of the slower tires that everybody else had. And it was just hilarious to watch him make them all completely wrong about that.
And then going back to, so Gasly's 5-second penalty, which didn't make any sense either. I mean, he passed off the track, didn't sort of give the place back. And then they said, let's give him a 5-second penalty, even though he's like 2.5 seconds up the road.
No, okay. So I agree with that getting a penalty, because even though he was far enough alongside, because the rule now is people are basically saying, if you're ahead at the apex, this was meant to be for the outside car. I'm assuming they're going to start applying that to the inside car. If you're ahead at the apex, you've got your nose ahead, you're sort of entitled to room. So if you're the inside car and you're ahead at the apex, you can basically run that other person off track. As long as you stay on track, that's fine. The outside car, to have the right to be left room on the outside, you need to have your nose ahead. This is, it seems to be how they're judging it. However, Gasly got to the point of being ahead by being like four wheels locked up, and Stroll had picked his line to turn in and had to steer out of it because Gasly was out of control. So I agree with that penalty, but I think there's a bit of confusion, Matt, as to this new directive about what cars do and when they should give the place back.
Okay, so admittedly, I'm going to go right now and look at the actual document as soon as I find it. But my understanding was that Gasly's penalty wasn't for forcing Stroll off track. It was for passing someone off track, gaining an advantage, and then not returning it.
Okay, that's weird. Okay.
Well, Gasly was all four wheels off when he passed Stroll. And I think that's what that penalty was about.
Either way, same result.
Just one more thing. The FIA need to clamp down on that, because now I'm going to pass somebody around the outside in all cases. Gasly would have lost so much more time. He would have fallen probably behind Albon if he gave the place back, because Albon was right there hunting Stroll. And at the end results, Albon 12th, Gasly 11th. That could have changed the course of the race. The FIA need to be a bit more draconian with that. And the fact that they gave 5 seconds to him for that is a little bit, is a very, very weird, I think.
Well, I agree with it.
I double-checked, leaving the track, gaining an advantage. That's why Gasly got the penalty.
All right. So it is okay to get ahead of another driver by being all four wheels locked up, leave some 11s down the back straight, and then just force your opponent off. Okay. But if Gasly had done all that but managed to stay on, that would have been a legit pass. That doesn't feel right with me. That doesn't sit okay with me. But does that mean Daniel Ricciardo's back? See, I got laughed off of the BBC Checkered Flag podcast when I said that Ricciardo would get him back. That was at the end of last season. But finally, I've been proved right by this one race, Matt. Finally, he's back.
Yeah, just give him a 2.5 second advantage over everyone he's racing and look at him pass people.
Yeah, I know. But look, at least it was, I guess, a consolation prize.
It was actually, it was lovely to see. Like, I am making fun of it because he had such a huge tire advantage, but it was lovely to see him out there passing people. And yeah, it was really worthwhile.
Just shows what confidence can do in this sport, because last week he had an absolute shocker. Bottom of the timing sheets in every session. Just a horrible, horrible weekend for him. And then he's come here. The race is going relatively well. The strategy is falling into his hands. And yeah, on those soft tyres, just seeing the grip and the confidence in that car that he's probably not had all season. It was Daniel Ricciardo of old. It was great to see.
Hi, it's Spanners here from Missed Apex Podcast. And if you've got 56 minutes in to a race review about that Mexican Grand Prix, then you probably enjoy having Missed Apex on in the background. And I just want to say I've had so many fantastic interactions in the last few weeks over email, over DMs, and talking and chatting and discussing things over Twitter. So please do keep them coming. I really have felt like I'm just in the middle of a lovely little corner of the F1 fan digital content space. And it's been really nice interacting with you guys. I always read everything that comes in. Sometimes the messages will be brief. Sometimes they'll be too long and you'll wish I stopped replying. But please do keep those interactions coming. I'm at SpannersReady on Twitter or RichardReady on Facebook. Or you could consider becoming a patron if you've been listening to us all season. Patreon.com/MissedApex. Check out the tiers there. You'll have an ad-free feed and we'll have content all through the winter as well. Don't worry, we'll have that F1 fix directed, injected directly into your veins. We'll have one show a week all the way off the off season, or over the off season, until we get to the 2023 season proper. And also, if you think you were doing a good job, but you don't like the Patreon model and you just want to pat me and Matt on the head, you can go and check out our tip jar in the notes below. I guarantee 100% Patreon gets used to further the productivity of the whole project and keep us going. We are only here because of our patrons. Guarantee the tip jar will at least partially be spent on rum for me and whiskey for Matt.
Yes.
Okay, so missedapexpodcast.com/tip jar or click the link below. Thanks for listening. Who's the biggest Ferrari fan on the panel? I don't think we've ever found out about your fandom, Stuffy. Stuffy, where'd you plant your flag? Don't say you're neutral or I will boot you off this Zoom call super fast. Oh, you're on mute, I think, there, Stuffy. So we'll never know. You're on mute, so we'll never know. He said it. He'd revealed his fandom, but now we'll never know what a massive Stroll fan he is.
I get asked this question every single watch along that I do.
Yeah.
And ultimately, I'm British. I'm a British bias.
Brit bias. Brit bias.
Growing up with Lewis Hamilton, I support George Russell, Lando Norris, even Alex Albon, even though he flies under the Thai flag.
Yeah.
That is what I repeat every single time. And McLaren is probably my favourite team.
And I think that's a sort of default in sport in general. Like if you're going to get into football and you don't know who to support, you go along to your local team and you cheer for your country at the World Cup. Brits come under, I always get accused of, Brit bias, even though I'm only a fan of like one of the Brits. All I'll say is if you're getting accused of Brit bias, the Australians all support the driver by default, Weber or Ricardo. The Mexicans, everyone loves it when they go mad for Perez. And of course, the Dutch default behind Max Verstappen. So I shan't berate you for that, Stuffy. Your watch-alongs, you mentioned it. It's something that I would never do. I wouldn't be brave enough to do it. But tell us where we can find your watch-alongs for the last two races.
Over on my YouTube, at Stuffy. A bit of a weird spelling, STUFFEY. Apologies for that. It's basically my first initial and last name. But
Scott
someone else.
Tuffy, Stuffy with a double Y. A double E, yep. Double Y. Link will be in the show notes below. Not a Ferrari fan then, so you will have been pleased seeing them disappear sadly into the midfield.
Well, the team, not so much, but their drivers I am fans of. I really like Carlos Sainz and Charles Leclerc. And it was a boring day at the office for them, wasn't it? They were in no man's land, both of them. I think they finished nearly 30 seconds ahead of Daniel Ricciardo, and then about the same from George Russell in front. So I kind of even forgot they was on the track, to be honest. Everyone... when you're watching the timing sheets of everyone coming across the line, because more than half the field got lapped, everyone had finished their times and their races before Ferrari even did, and yet they finished fifth and sixth.
So what you're saying is Ferrari finished last in this race?
Well, yeah pretty much, but somehow still finished fifth and sixth, yeah. A very, very poor weekend for them, and almost seems like we knew they'd given up on this season.
But they've given up. They've double given up, yeah.
Bonotto's not even bothered to turn up to the last two races. Apparently, he's back in Italy trying to GM up for next year, which is the right person you want to be GMing you up.
I think we've learned from team principals in the past, Matt, that the team principal doesn't necessarily have to be at every race and will prioritise other things. They're not changing tyres, are they?
No, I think we've learned from Matthew Carter exactly how important team principals are in many cases.
I'll forward him that clip. All right.
Yes, indeed. Well,
I know what you're going to do. I know what you're going to do now. A, gloat that Sainz was on form, and B, you're going to make excuses for Ferrari. I can just feel it.
I'm not going to make excuses for Ferrari, but do you remember earlier when we were talking about the altitude in the air in Mexico?
I do remember that. That was really good.
That was good. You remember me mentioning specifically turbochargers?
No, I'd fallen asleep by then.
Yeah, of course you did. As it turns out, the official word from the Tifosi, from the Scuderia themselves, is that they had turbocharger issues running them at full RPM because of the altitude. They were basically exploding, remember Friday? So in order to keep that from happening, they basically turned their power units way down and then took a bunch of downforce off the car. So I think if I'm correct about Ferrari, essentially what they said was, what's the slowest we can go and still finish ahead of whichever midfielder is going to be behind us.
And not explode.
And not blow up our engine, yes. Yeah.
Well, speaking of stuff blowing up, I think the next thing we need to go to is Alonso. Not only did his car blew up, his ego blew up, his social media blew up. He was, so I'll tell you what, hats off to the lad. He's what? He's 47 years old, right? He's 47 years old. And even though he was running in a sort of middling position, he still had that fury and he was still helmet in his hands, and he was still, you know, throwing his arms, just frustrated at the lack of performance. The fire is still there. That is not in any doubt whatsoever. Of course, he's come under fire this week a little bit because he said, he was reported to have said, Lewis Hamilton's titles aren't as valuable as Max Verstappen's, which I don't think is quite what he was intending to say. But that story got a couple of times around the world before the truth had a chance to do up its shoelaces. But the fire is still in his belly, Jono, isn't it?
It is. Number one, normally Lewis has done a great job over the past couple years and for most of the last few years of not responding to that kind of stuff. He doesn't fight back at criticism from his competitors. To send that tweet out of him finishing first and Alonso second at Indianapolis 15 years ago was actually hilarious, you know, because Alonso has been making these digs at Lewis the last couple years since the pandemic started. Alonso has been going all in on sort of demeaning and despising Lewis Hamilton's sort of achievements because he's had the quickest car and all this kind of stuff. So there was a lot of stuff going on there. Now, when he retired the car and he was going berserk and waving his arms and all this kind of sort of attitude he had, you know, it's good to know that at 41 years old, he's still got that fire, which 41 years old is now the new young, because as far as we found out before the podcast, the new British Prime Minister is 42 years old.
The same age as me. I'm the same age as the Prime Minister.
Anyway, as angry I was just getting at my headphones there because they cut out for a bit, that's how angry Alonso was at on his car today. I love the fire. I love his competitive spirit. And again, another lesson, lesson 42 of the Fernando Alonso Media School. Bite back at your competitors.
So it would be jarring if he was not beating teammates, if he was poodling around at the back, if he was phoning it in. And so with Sebastian Vettel, as good as he is and as loved as he is, you could see that same fire wasn't there. You could see him mentally checking out. And, you know, he said he'd been struggling with that for a long time. I don't think Alonso's given 5 minutes thought this year that he might retire. Stuffy.
Yeah, I mean, he was a man who seemed like he was on a mission today. He was really a tale of two halves for Alonso. Heard him, his engineer, come on the radio and he went, give me whatever tire you want. The car feels really good. He was running in P7, only behind the top six. And then I'm just looking now, they put him onto the hard tire after 40 laps on the mediums. And then obviously it just went straight downhill. His demeanor changed very quickly. He wasn't a happy boy again. And of course, icing on the cake was his engine going pop. So yeah, really, we saw all sides of Alonso today and this weekend, really, in general.
Go on, Matt.
They put Ocon onto the hard tire first. As with Hamilton, the lap times were good. And so he was perfectly happy to go onto that tire. But I'll tell you in my mind what really happened. So I was surprised because Ocon had the whole battle with Bottas, and now you have the Alpines running line astern. You're thinking this is great for them versus McLaren. And then I look up because the leaders are coming through, and there's Ocon right behind Alonso. And I'm like, that was like 6 or 7 seconds. And they were roughly on pace with each other. So I was surprised that gap had closed. And then, you know, the two of them go by him, and then bang goes his engine. I think he got out of the car and he was like, oh, well, you know, this is Formula One. I grew up in the era where my engine could explode any lap. And he looked up and saw Daniel Ricciardo's times on the soft tire, knew he'd only pitted 5 laps earlier than him, and he completely lost it with the Alpine strategy department. I think that's where his anger came from.
Well, do you remember Alonso went through a phase of when the race wasn't going well or when he was just out of the points? He'd go, oh, no, I've got a handbrake issue. He'd be like, oh, the sunroof isn't working. Fernando, there's no sunroof. And he would just park it. So I just wondered, like, oh, was that, did that happen today? Or did he have a genuine engine blow up?
I think it was a genuine engine blow up. Okay. But I think the anger was looking at the soft tire times that Ricardo was running.
They're just, Alpine are just trying to make Fernando Alonso sorry, or making it, just get him out as soon as possible. Because as we know with Alonso's form, Alpine, the team he leaves ends up improving the year after. So fully expect Alpine to be sorting out their reliability issues and fighting for podiums next year, and him slogging it out at the back with the Williams maybe, or whoever's going to be down the bottom.
If you remember, that was lesson, I think, 8 of like 99 of Alonso's media school. Alienate everyone you've ever met in Formula One and when you leave.
Yes, well, you know, teams do have him back, though. You know, like when McLaren got him back, you're like, no, he's no good for you, Maka. He's no good for you. Oh, no, he loves me, really, honestly. Jono, we love you, really. What are you up to? You are a presenter and a commentator, one of some renowned, but on an island on a rock. Far, far away, quite a big island. What are you up to in Australia?
Yeah. Oh, what am I up to? So I am finishing my postgrad in broadcasting in a couple of weeks, which will be great, which means I'm leaving the dread of the freelance world, which I've been in the last 2 years, because it is painful, I have to admit.
No, I know.
I know a lot of people trying to enter that space, and it's not fun.
It will be nice to have someone who knows what they're doing with broadcast media in Mist Apex. It'd be great.
I'm still finding that person. So if you find somebody, let me know.
Tell us where to click on things where we can see you say stuff.
Yeah, so Instagram, Twitter, that's the best place to follow me for motorsport wise, social wise. At Johnny S8, JonnyESS8. Don't bring it up. You've said it for 2 years now. Just don't say what you want to say. I know what you want to say.
All your tags are rubbish. That's it. That's all I'm going to say. But go and follow him in the show notes below. That's nearing the end of our Mexican Grand Prix race review. It's the podium. And what a podium it is. Hats off to those people on the other side of the sea, because the Mexicans and the Americans, they seem to know how to have a party, how to have an event. I love the EJs. I love the skeleton guy walking around and boo humbug to anybody who poo-poos it. I like the car coming up through a podium. I like fireworks. I like people celebrating and enjoying it. You know, what a show. You may as well enjoy that because the track isn't changing. The altitude thing isn't changing. Is there a way to make a country lower? No. I'm hearing from my producer on my ear, there is not a way to simply make Mexico lower. There's definitely some room for track layout. Maybe they could change that inner go-kart circuit bit and make it a nice V with a braking zone, or maybe curve it out into a nice hairpin in that kind of turn 5-6 complex. Maybe there's things they can do, but I don't see the Mexican Grand Prix going anywhere. Manage expectations, enjoy the festival, relax, turn the volume up, enjoy watching the race cars go round. But this is the part of the show where we give out some awards. And we start off nice and positive. Trigger warning, the second one isn't positive. We get all mean, call people turnips and all sorts. But the first one is the Good Thing Award. So this is where we ask our panel, what, who, or when was your thing of the weekend? Let's go to Stuffy, what did it for you? What flicked your wick?
What flicked my wick was the Sky F1 soundtrack in the mariachi band.
Yeah.
I need that thing on my playlist.
Yeah.
That probably got me hyped for the race. The race let me down, but that got me hyped before every single session this weekend. And I wish I could say something positive about the racing, but that, yeah. Keep it, Sky.
I think they do that. I think they've done that every year. I don't think that is new to this year, but I think they did it at a slightly different point. And people were going mad, going, what? No mariachi theme?
It was brilliant. Mm. I love Mexico anyway. I've been holidayed a few times. So not rubbing it. It's just a lovely country. Go check it out. Cancun's a lovely place. The mariachi band is a staple anywhere.
Sounds like you're giving your thing of the weekend to Mexico, if I'm honest, Stuffy. And I'm down with that.
Mexicans, lovely people and a lovely place.
Yeah, and right, what you should do, what Jono should do is, Jono, you could get someone from Mexico to put a bit of bread on the ground And then you in Australia also put a bit of bread on the ground and you basically have an earth sandwich.
Wait, how does that make any sense?
Well, because you have two bits of bread on opposite sides of the world and it would be like two bits of bread with the earth in between. Earth sandwich.
I always thought if you dug, people always said if you dug underneath Australia, you'll end up in China. No, but I think that's
just
wrong.
Yeah, you'll just
I feel
be
like
dead.
We'd end up in the UK, I feel like.
Is yeah, that, so, so UK would go all the way to New Zealand if you didn't die a fiery death. But you and me could do it. We could make an earth sandwich after the show. But first, I think you should tell me what was your thing of the weekend.
Well, it was going to be the Stuffy said, but I've got another one. And you know what? Just because the other day, somebody bumped into me and said, hey, it's good to have an Aussie on Missed Apex podcast. But they're like, can you just be a bit more like show your Daniel Ricciardo love? You don't show enough Daniel Ricciardo love. So you know what? I'll finally do that today. It was great to see him racing like the old Danny Rick. He said after he got the penalty, he just drove like he did not give a stuff anymore. It was great to see. He gets my good thing of the weekend.
I really thought you were going to say because Tsunoda had it coming. Yeah, no. Anyway, okay. Matt Two Rumpets at MattPT55 on Twitter or Matt Trumpets on Facebook and Instagram. Links in that show notes below. Dude, who was your thing of the weekend?
Well, now it's getting challenging because I was going to go with the soft tires on Ricardo. I'm tempted to go with Fermin, who made a special visit to F1 TV. But you know what I'm going to go with, even though we didn't really talk about it too much?
Tell me.
I'm going to go with Max Verstappen. He won his 14th race, record-breaking, and he did it in exactly the uber-dominant style that has come to terrify anyone who's lived through Sebastian Vettel and Lewis Hamilton in the last decade and a half.
There's definitely a fear factor, and I think a lot of what we were talking about with Mercedes tactics, they were almost shadow boxing a threat that didn't exist. Even if we say, well, the conditions went into Red Bull's favour. Mercedes weren't racing like they were when they were dominant. They're racing like Red Bull were. Basically, Red Bull used to be the ones in the Mercedes dominance doing the different tyre strategy, forcing the understop, the undercut. And they were good at it. Mercedes are having to learn to be the disruptors and having to work around them because there is a fear, you're absolutely right, that Max Verstappen and Red Bull will have an answer for anything.
Yeah, and let's be clear. I'm talking about not just Red Bull, but Max. I mean, the car was not shifting great. He was actually in that car not as fast as Perez through big chunks of the race because it wasn't working at 100%. And when he went onto those medium tires, his lap times were terrifyingly consistent. 10 laps in a row with like maybe a tenth and a half between them. It was really astonishing to watch.
Jono.
So back to the record just on that. So because people always want to see the percentage. They say, oh, you know, there's like 400 F1 races a year now, which is what it feels like. Honestly, and just before I get back to the record topic, I have actually feeling fatigued this year watching Formula One. I don't know if it's the 11 p.m. and 4 a.m. races like every single weekend, but man, it's getting to me right now. So thank God there's two races to go. But back to the record, percentage-wise, he sits very well. He's at 70%, and the only people better than him are Michael Schumacher in 2004 and Alberto Ascari, who won 6 out of 8 races in 1952.
Okay.
That's whatever. So if Verstappen wins these final two races, he will do better than Michael Schumacher in 2004. If he only wins one of the next two races, he will not do better. Either way, what a record-breaking season. Well done to him.
Yeah, just lastly, quickly on that point, people always say it's the car, just like it was in previous years with Hamilton. But do you know what? This is when you see the best drivers get the best out of their machinery. That's when we see dominant performances like this. And Max this year has been much more mature than he was last year. He's driven like a world champion and he thoroughly deserves that record. For the good of the general F1 fan, hopefully we get closer competition this year, but you have to marvel at the whole package as a whole. You put a car like that in someone like Max Verstappen's hands.
All right.
So just a little bit of Max love in there so that it's not all British bias.
Yeah,
as
and I'll light up the YouTube comments. Okay, so I'm going to put, I'm going to pour some water on it and then I'm going to also put some extra coals on the fire as well because let's be honest, this is a dominant season for Red Bull. You could put an awful lot of drivers in that car with a number two teammate and they would win. But before you stop typing. I said, but to put yourself in that position that Max Verstappen has put himself in, and I'm sure he takes a lot of the credit for the development of the car, as the best drivers do, that takes something. And also 2021, that is a season where you put 80% of the grid in that car in 2021, and they're probably not even challenging Mercedes. Mercedes might run away with 2021. And I believe it's the same in 2017, 2018. Put most of the grid in that Mercedes, and Sebastian Vettel wins those two championships. So that's where your driver can make a difference. I say, don't judge it over this one dominant season. Judge his journey with Red Bull. And I'm sure if you speak to Red Bull engineers, they will give Max a chunk of credit for the direction and development of that car as well. I want to give my thing of the weekend. I'm going to give it to Valtteri Bottas. Even though it sort of didn't go well, there's this emerging trend that if you just remove all the grip, he'd be a really good F1 driver. So I think we're showing an anti-Finnish bias in Formula One by having too much grip. If we just had the odd race, we've got street circuits, why not have the odd ice track? And then I think you'd see Bottas going and having his kind of specialist weekends. Although it could descend to the level where on the ice tracks, they bring in ringers. So they bring in like Finnish drivers, specialist drivers. Oh, suddenly Leclerc's got a bad back and Raikkonen is going to come in for that event. All right, here's the bit where we are a little bit less nice. It's the Missed Apex Award.
Oh no, you missed the apex.
Who missed the apex for you, Stubby?
Christian Horner.
Here we go.
We could go on and on and on.
I tried.
Yeah, we haven't been talking about it as well. Stuffy's been the ruiner here. Go on.
I'm sorry. I'm sorry. The press conference was laughable after the... regardless of what you think penalties-wise, they broke the cost cap, and some of the excuses he came out with was ridiculous. He got asked, do you owe your team... fellow competitors an apology and the fans? No, they owe me an apology. And the thing that made me laugh the most was, I know he's arrogant anyway, but other teams did dummy runs in 2020 to prepare for this. Red Bull, he openly said, no, we didn't do one. We just submitted our intermittent submissions in our accounts in April. We got no comments back, so we thought we was fine. Turns out he wasn't, buddy, and I'd be very worried about 2022 as well. That's all I'm going to say.
Yeah, well, we've done pretty well avoiding that topic. Obviously, I haven't on Twitter. If you follow my Twitter, I've been talking about it quite a lot. They miscalculated by their own calculations. They overspent or were found to have spent more than they thought they did in 13 different areas. So they were either pushing their luck massively and got caught out in those 13 areas. Because if they only got caught out in 13 areas... then they were probably pushing it to the limit in all the areas. And they were found to have come over it. But the mitigations stated by the FIA means that they are getting a relatively small penalty. I think we'll cover that in a bit more detail in the mailbag show on Sunday. No, Jono wants to come in.
Well, before we cover it, though, I mean, isn't F1 all about sustainability? The amount of gaslighting in that press conference was insane. And that was just absolutely ridiculous. You know what I mean? We have to be careful. We're treading on hot water here with everything he's saying.
Okay, good. Well, I'll tell you now, I'm not on Sunday's show because I'm away. So there'll be a guest host and that will be for them to deal with. Fantastic. Matt, two rumpets. Who missed the apex for you?
Well... since we're talking about the cost cap a little tiny bit.
Oh, my God. Why?
Oh, here we go.
And I would go with Red Bull, and I would go the 13 procedural breaches, except for they weren't the only team that made that many categorical errors. Our friends at Aston Martin, who have shown a disturbing propensity for following the Red Bull leader, missed 12 categories in their procedural breach.
Okay. Who's the mistake apex for, Matt?
It's got to be for Aston Martin, but not for that. I just wanted to mention that. Just because, wow, did they ever give their drivers an undrivable car? I mean, between listening to Stroll's radio the first half of the race and watching what happened to Vettel once they put him on his second set of tires, I don't know what went wrong there, but it went very, very, very wrong, especially looking last week at the race in the United States.
Well, I'll go before Jono. Did I give, for my thing of the weekend, did I give Ted Kravitz the award for accurate pit lane reporting on Sky? Did I do that? Oh, no, I didn't. Well, in that case, I'm going to give him my missed Apex award goes to Ted Kravitz for managing to get Sky banned from interviewing Max Verstappen and any of the Red Bull team. And apparently this embargo is going to go on, quote, indefinitely. And that was in response to his notebook, Ted's notebook, which I think is very, very good. I think he's a generational talent and he's made that space his own, where he claimed, I agree with it. He said Lewis Hamilton was robbed of the 2021 Drivers' Championship in context about talking about a potential F1 film movie plot, which would all be fine. But he did say it about 17 times in about 8 minutes. And that might be what irked Verstappen and Red Bull.
Are you telling us we're not going to hear Christian Horner on the pit wall anymore? Ah, what a shame.
Indefinitely. And let's end with Jonathan Simon.
Before that, they can't. Red Bull, it's a temporary statement, but if you let go of Sky Sports, Germany, Italy, F1, or Britain and all that, you lose so much viewership and everything to your team. So it's only going to be for like one or two rounds. They'll be back. Bad thing of the weekend. Now, I don't know if this is a conspiracy or if it's an internet hoax, or I don't know what's going on here, but apparently Lewis Hamilton's forehead was fine after the national anthem was finished. The Mexican national anthem. After the race, he had a huge scar on the, I think it was the right side. Now, I don't know if my camera's mirrored now because this is my right side. Anyway, but he's got a huge scar. I can't tell at the moment's manners. I'm so confused. Yeah. I won't look at myself. But if you look at him and there's pictures going around on the internet, there's a scar there. And apparently a cameraman or a camera person, whoever it was, a camera person was strolling around the grid and might have accidentally hit him really, really hard with a camera. And it's caused a huge scar. He's finished the whole race and it could have, you know, done some stuff. Anyway, that's not, that's my bad thing of the weekend is if that's true, God, that's like, imagine being the camera person who hits Lewis Hamilton with a camera.
Ugh. Yeah, I mean, it's happened before. I'm thinking, is it Montoya? Was it Montoya that got hit with a cameraman and absolutely went mad at him? Go and search Juan Pablo Montoya, cameraman, and he absolutely kicks off at this cameraman. I'm assuming Lewis didn't do that. That doesn't seem to be in his nature. Matt, did you have a last point on that?
I'm just enjoying the large number of conditionals on this particular bad thing of the weekend.
Stuffy.
I just wanted to add to that. I think, I don't know if it's got any correlation or not, but another probably bad thing is that there's been reports of a considerable amount of people, more so than ever, in the paddock this week. Some of the drivers, some of the clips I've seen online of Carlos Sainz going for a jog and him being hounded by fans and Max Verstappen as well. It seems like it got a little bit out of control and I don't know, maybe the grid was too full and that's why Lewis bumped into him there. I don't know, but yeah, they really need to tie down on security moving forward. And that just adds to some previous poor fan experiences we've had at tracks this year as well. So not great.
And that about wraps up our Mexican Grand Prix race review here at Missed Apex Podcast. Thanks for keeping us company late into the night if you watched it live. And if you're watching it on a recording or on your podcast feed, just do us a favor. Send your friends over to missedapex.net. Simple as that. missedapex.net. And there'll be one click away from either watching or listening to Missed Apex Podcast. We don't have a fancy advertising budget. You are our greatest weapon in letting people know that this is a fun place to hang out. Money's also useful. Patreon.com/missedapex or click on the tip jar link in the show notes below. And please, even if you're not massively into Twitter and Facebook and Instagram, check out the social media links and give us a follow. It is an amazing boost for us to grow our social media followings. And it means that we can advertise to you when we're going live, the extra things we're doing. Go and check out our iRacing tournament that we did last night. There was some brilliant action. If you want to see me sad because I got punted out of a potentially race-winning position in much the same way that Tsunoda got taken out by Ricciardo today, then go and check out Race 2. We'll put those links in the show notes below as well. And our karting video is out as well. So go and look on our social media and we'll show you where all our karting video is. And at least you can save a link to keep you entertained when F1 is on a two-week break and even when it wraps up over winter. Go and follow my panel, Scott Tuffy, Stuffy. Go and follow Jonathan Simon. Go and follow Matt Two Rumpets. And most importantly, follow me at Spanners Ready on Twitter. I'm the best one. And we will be here spannerless on Sunday for a mailbag show. Get your questions into feedback@mistapex.net. feedback@mistapex.net with the subject line mailbag. And I might have some fancy magazine show segments coming up for you before the Brazilian Grand Prix. Possibly my favourite Grand Prix on the calendar. But until we see you next, work hard, be kind, and have fun. This was Missed Apex Podcast.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.